Good afternoon once again, brothers and sisters and young people. Well, in our first class, we developed this idea that Shechem is a choice between blessing and cursing. We want to develop that idea a little further in our second class and look specifically at the two mountains as to why Gerizim is the hill of blessing, why Ebal is the hill of cursing. Just put back up the map that we used in our first session, which very plainly shows the lessons of Shechem. Firstly, its meaning, to bear a burden, to bear responsibility, or to shoulder. It has two mountains, Gerizim, the hill of blessing, which means the cuttings off would be separate. So blessing lies in being separate from this world. And of course, Mount Ebal, the mount of cursing. It means to be bald or to be bare. And we'll explain what that means a little bit further in this class. Well, the time came, brothers and sisters and young people, for the children of Israel to come in the land. The wilderness generation had passed off the scene, and a new group of Israelites emerged, those who were not numbered at Sinai, and those who would begin a new life in the land. Where do you think the first place is they would go? It's not necessarily the first place that you would think they would go, or the first place that geographically is where you would go. Well, what happened was Moses told them in Deuteronomy chapter 11 to take the people to Shechem. It says, "In the day when Yahweh thy God hath brought thee in unto the land." Notice that. When Yahweh thy God hath brought thee unto the land. Deuteronomy 27, which you just read from, said, "In the day you cross over Jordan." So, as soon as they came into the land, the very first thing that they were to do was that they would go to Shechem. Moses told Joshua very explicitly, take the people to Shechem, chant the blessings and the cursings, and tell them to make up their mind. Do they want a blessing or do they want a curse? Before anybody got a piece of land, before the Canaanite was ever fought, they went to Shechem so that this might be impressed upon them. So we see that it was the first commandment that the people had to keep when they entered the land. And it was not applicable to the wilderness generation, the generation that didn't go into the land, that never learned the lesson of Shechem. This, of course, was fulfilled in Joshua chapter 8. That's the reason why Jericho had to be destroyed. Because if you look at the point where Israel crossed into the land at Bethabara, to Shechem is about 25 miles to the northwest. Laying right between where they crossed and Shechem was the city of Jericho. Now, how can you get 2 million people from the crossing point to Mount Shechem if Jericho's sitting in the way? Jericho was a great big citadel which represented the whole land. That's why Jericho had to be destroyed. So that's why it wasn't until Joshua 8 that they came to Shechem. But that was the first thing that they were supposed to do. Now, who was it that they were supposed to remember when they came to Shechem? Let's come to this reference in Deuteronomy chapter 11, first of all. Deuteronomy chapter 11. If I was to ask you, in one word, summarize why the children of Israel in the wilderness did not inherit the land, what would that one word be? Paul says in Hebrews 3 and 4, that one word is unbelief. The Greek word there, pistios, means lack of faith. Lack of faith was the one reason, if you had to sum it all up, why the wilderness generation didn't inherit the land. So here's a new generation about to come into the land, and they need to learn the lesson of faith. Now, Deuteronomy chapter 11, in verses 26 to 32, we have the command to go to Shechem and the principle of the two mountains, Ebal and Gerizim. What I want you to notice, just before that, in verse 24 of Deuteronomy chapter 11, we read these words. Every place whereon the sole of your feet shall tread shall be yours, from the wilderness and Lebanon, from the river Euphrates, even unto the uttermost sea, shall your coast be. Now, who do those words in verse 24 make you think of? every place where the sole of your foot shall tread. Abraham, right. In Genesis chapter 13, in that famous chapter, God said, you know, lift up your eyes and look, and all the land that thou seest will I give to thee and to thy seed for an everlasting possession. Now, God didn't just say, okay, look at the land and believe me. God said, walk through the land that I will give thee. So Abraham had to show his enthusiasm for that promise by walking through the land. And every place upon where the sole of his foot did tread, God would give to him. Notice verse 24. From the wilderness and Lebanon to the river Euphrates. Those are the very words of Genesis 15, the Abrahamic land grant, which we were all familiar with. So, in the context of the people's minds being taken back to the example of Abraham, we find the command to go to Shechem. And guess who they were supposed to remember? Or what incident they were supposed to remember? It's Genesis chapter 12 that we looked at in our first section. Shechem, for Abraham, as we saw, was the very first place he came to in the land. The first place that this new generation was to go to? Shechem. My red dot is starting to have nightmares of this stuff happening. Anyway. Everyone, you can see. So the first assembly point in the land for the new generation was Shechem. There was blessing and there was cursing, as we saw in Genesis 12. So there's a hill of blessing and a hill of cursing in Deuteronomy 11. There was an altar constructed by Abraham. You'll remember when he had to make up his mind, he built an altar unto Yahweh that he would serve God and not the Canaanites. Well, Moses commanded Joshua to build an altar. And they built the altar and put it in Mount Ebal. There was the oak, or the plains of Moreh, that he came to in Genesis chapter 12. Well, in Deuteronomy 11 and verse 30, we have once again the plains of Moreh mentioned. The teacher, the archer, the former rain. Speaking, of course, of the Lord Jesus Christ in type. And we have the Canaanites, still in the land, just as when Abraham was there many hundreds of years earlier. So this is what they were supposed to think about. They were supposed to recall Abraham's faith. They were supposed to recall his example and not repeat the mistakes of the wilderness generation who perished because of lack of faith. They were to follow their father, Abraham, the father of the faithful. So why is Gerizim the hill of blessing and why is Ebal the hill of cursing? Well, when you look at the two mountains, do you notice anything different about them? Yeah, this is Gerizim over here. It's green, you see? See right on the very edge, you see all the green growth that's there on Gerizim? Shechem is actually one of the most fertile parts of the land. Even today, the Jezreel Valley, which is Shechem at the foot of the Jezreel Valley, is a very productive and fertile part of the land. And you see that on Gerizim, the hill of blessing. It's shaggy and it's luxuriant. Look at Ebal. There isn't a blade of grass. There isn't a tree. There isn't flowers. There's nothing on Ebal. And how ironic it is that you have two mountains side by side like that. One fruitful and the other one completely dry and arid. Well, God designed that so the people would know what their decisions in life should be. Should it be blessing or should it be cursing? Now, firstly, Ebal, the hill of cursing. Ebal's very name signifies to become bald. Now, we saw that in the very mountain itself. It's completely dry, it's completely arid, there's nothing there. It's bald. Now, baldness was a punishment for disobedience under the law. In Micah chapter 1 and verse 16, because the nation had been disobedient, God says, I will make you bald. I will smite you with baldness. It was also a heathen practice, which in Deuteronomy chapter 14, the nation was forbidden from partaking in. It's higher than Mount Gerizim by a few hundred feet because more people ultimately choose cursing over blessing. Few there be that choose blessing, that choose life, said the Lord Jesus Christ in Matthew chapter 7 and verses 13 and 14. And that is why Moses told Joshua to put the altar not on Mount Gerizim, the hill of blessing, but upon Mount Ebal, the hill of cursing, because he knew that most of the nation, after his departing, would choose death over life. He said in Deuteronomy chapter 31 and verse 29, I know that after my departing, you will utterly corrupt yourselves. So he told him to put the altar on Mount Ebal as a witness to all and also as a warning to the faithful not to go in that direction. Mount Ebal was also an indictment to King Ahab. We all know who he was. Now, how was it an indictment to King Ahab? Well, just about 10 miles to the north of the land of, in the land of Israel, 10 miles to the north of Shechem, is a little place called Ahab's Ivory Palace. It's not a little place. It's actually very, very exquisite. It looks a lot like Gerizim as far as its growth and its beauty. Archaeologists have proven beyond all dispute that that place in Samaria is Ahab's Ivory Palace. You can go there today, you can see it. When you go to Ahab's Ivory Palace, my parents have visited, so I know. They said, if you turn around and you look down towards Shechem, Ahab's Ivory Palace is constructed in such a direction that you can see Mount Ebal, but you can't see Mount Gerizim. And the guy that was with them that really knew nothing about the Bible, he said, ladies and gentlemen, if you just turn around and look down that direction about 10 miles, you can see Mount Ebal. And it was sticking out just like the end of your fingernail on the thumb of your hand. And he could see the hill of cursing, but he couldn't see the hill of blessing. It had overshadowed it. He couldn't see it. And he'll know exactly what that meant. King Ahab. So Ebal, in summary, represents those who choose to walk in sin. And in so doing, they suffer the consequence of cursing. Of course, none of us want that, do we? We all want blessing. But there are certain responsibilities that must be adhered to if we want blessing. So what about Gerizim, the hill of blessing? In contrast to Ebal, Gerizim is noted for its luxuriance. It lies in Shechem, one of the most fruitful parts of the land. That's a statement taken from A.P. Stanley's work, Sinai and Palestine. You might not know who A.P. Stanley is, but if I was to tell you the words, O Master, it is good to be high on the mountain here with thee, you probably know that hymn from our hymn book. Well, that was written by A.P. Stanley. He says it's one of the most fruitful parts of the land in his work, Sinai and Palestine. Now, to the Israelite, hair is a symbol of maturity. It's a symbol of dignity, and it's not to be interfered with. Now, you have those very unusual provisions in the law that they weren't to round or to mar the corners of their beard. They were to let them grow out. You see Jews today even like that. Well, that's because to the Israelite, hair is a symbol of maturity. It's a symbol of dignity and wisdom of years. And that's not something to be cut off. It's something, rather, to be honored. Proverbs 20 and verse 29 says, you will stand up in the presence of a gray-haired man. You show respect and dignity towards that person. And so the fact that Gerizim was covered with fertility and it was shaggy, unlike Ebal, was a symbol that those who choose life show it by their fruits. By their fruits, said the Lord Jesus Christ, you will know them. And so Gerizim signifies separation. It represents those who, like Abraham, elevate their minds to savor the blessings of the truth and bring forth fruit unto God. They grow up. In other words, they're mature unto him in all things who is the head, even Christ. And I looked out there, Psalm 133, which talks about the beard of the high priest, a symbol of his maturity, upon whose head the anointing oil was poured, and it ran down to his collar, to his beard. It represented the high priest and his maturity, and all those who, like him, choose blessing. Now then, with that lesson in mind, you have there in verse 26 of Deuteronomy 11, "Behold, I set," that's that word equalize, which we looked at in our first class, "Behold, I set before you this day a blessing and a curse, a blessing if you obey the commandments of Yahweh your God, which I command you this day, and a curse if you will not obey the commandments of Yahweh your God, but turn aside out of the way which I command you this day to go after other gods, which ye have not known. It came to pass, when Yahweh thy God hath brought thee into the land whither thou goest to possess it, that thou shalt put the blessing upon Mount Gerizim and the curse upon Mount Ebal." And then, after this, Moses told Joshua which tribes to put on which mountains. Six tribes would be on the hill of cursing. Six tribes would be on the hill of blessing. The priests would be in the middle, where the town of Shechem lies, and they would chant the blessings and the cursings. Now, who would they be thinking about when they did that? Of course, it was in that very spot where God told Abraham, "I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee." They were there to chant the blessings and the cursings of the law, yes. But it was a reminder to them of their father, Abraham. So now we're going to do a fun little exercise. And if you have your maps, which were distributed at the beginning of this class, and if you could sort of have the maps in one hand, and with your other hand, open to Deuteronomy chapter 27 and verses 12 and 13. What is the lesson then of the tribes that are on the hill of cursing as opposed to the tribes that are on the hill of blessing? Some ingenious ideas have been suggested as to why, which tribes are on the hill of blessing and which tribes are on the hill of cursing. Let's see if we can discover what the reason for that is. Now, if you have your maps, and if you have a colored pencil or something of that nature, something you can mark with, let's just point out those tribes that were on the hill of cursing. Now, just before we do that, can everybody find Shechem on that map? See where it is? Now, where is Shechem in the land? If you had to say where it is, north, south, middle, it's right in the center. It's Shechem is the physical center of the land of Israel. And that's where Abraham was promised the land. It's the physical center of the land. It's sort of like a crossroads where you can either make up your mind to go this way or you can make up your mind to go that way. So around the center of the land, we have all these tribes. Now, the tribes that are on the hill of cursing, Deuteronomy 27, verse 13. "And these shall stand upon Mount Ebal to curse," or for a cursing. "Reuben, Gad, Asher, Zebulun, Dan, and Naphtali." So, if you have a pencil or a marker or a highlighting pen, find a tribe of Reuben and either color it in or just mark it. The tribe of Reuben. If you can find where that is, it's just on the other side of the Dead Sea. On the other side of the River Jordan. Bottom right. Tribe of Reuben. Alright, next is the tribe of Asher. And where's the tribe of Asher? That's all the way up to the very northwest of the land. All the way up near where Tyre is today. The tribe of Asher. So if you can mark next, after you've done Reuben, the tribe of Asher. Alright, once you've got that, mark in the tribe of Gad. The next tribe on the hill of cursing. The tribe of Gad. Mark that one in. So on your map now, you should have Asher, Reuben, and Gad highlighted or marked or colored or whatever. What we're trying to do here is find out why these tribes are on the hill of cursing and why the other tribes are on the hill of blessing. You know, the next tribe is the tribe of Zebulun. Find the tribe of Zebulun. It's right up there where Mount Tabor is. Just to the southeast of the tribe of Asher. So Mark in the tribe of Zebulun. The next one is the tribe of Dan. Now this is a bit of a tricky one, because you'll see Dan is in two spots. You'll see Dan, there's a Dan all the way up there at the north, and there's also a Dan right down here towards the center where Joppa is. What we're going to do is we're going to color in the Dan at the very, very top. Now why are we leaving that one blank? Because what did the tribe of Dan do when they got into the land? Were they happy with that little place that God had given to them? No, they were unable to take it through lack of faith, and so they went off all the way up into the north of the land where the pickings were easy and you could live a nice, easy, comfortable life where you could gratify your lust. And they went all the way up there to the top, to Dan. That's the struggle of the life of Samson, you remember. He was just irritated that his tribe hadn't taken its inheritance, and it was only known as the camp of Dan. That's the great struggle of his life. So the tribe of Dan neglected their inheritance and went all the way up to the north of the land where they could live an easy, comfortable life far away from the house of God. The color is Dan there at the top. And the next tribe, the last tribe, is Naphtali, which is right next to Dan. So color or mark in or highlight the tribe of Naphtali. So, why are those tribes on the hill of cursing? And why are the other tribes on the hill of blessing? Well, what do you notice about those tribes that we highlighted? Where are they, generally speaking? They're on the perimeter. They're on the outside. The tribes who are on the hill of blessing, their borders all converge around the center. The tribes who are on the hill of cursing, they're all on the outside, the periphery. They're fringe members, in other words. So you've got a choice. You can either be at the center of God's purpose, and you'll get the hill of blessing. Or you can be on the outside. You know, one foot in the ecclesia, one foot in the world. And have your Sunday clothes and your Sunday attitudes and your rest of the week clothes and your rest of the week attitudes. You can either be at the center or you can be on the outside. That's why those tribes are on the hill of cursing. And that's why those tribes are on the hill of blessing. So the ones that are on the hill of blessing, which you should not have highlighted, are Simeon, which you remember was inside the tribe of Judah. They were being punished for what happened at Shechem. There was Benjamin. Ephraim, the children of Joseph, who are Manasseh and Ephraim, the Levites, who of course were dispersed throughout the land, and there was Issachar and Judah. Their borders all converge around the center. The ones that are on the hill of cursing are all on the outside. So the lesson is quite simple. Shechem is the physical center of the land. Here Abraham was first promised the land. The borders of the six tribes on the hill of blessing, Gerizim, converge around the center of the land. The six tribes on the hill of cursing, evil, all are on the perimeter of the land. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, do we want to be in the center of God's purpose? Or do we want to be on the outside? Now that lesson would have been very, very relevant to an Israelite. I'd like you to look up just these two references in Deuteronomy 25, just a couple of pages back. Do you want to be on the outside, or you want to be towards the middle, in the heart of where God's ecclesia is? Deuteronomy chapter 25, that says verse 2, it should actually be verses 18 and 19. Deuteronomy 25, verses 17 to 19. Remember what Amalek did unto thee by the way, when thou came forth out of Egypt. How he met thee by the way, and smote, who? The hindmost. The Hebrew word there is those that are in the uttermost parts, those in the periphery That's who Amalek captured and killed. Even all that were feeble behind thee, when thou wast faint and weary, and feared not God. Therefore it shall be, when Yahweh hath given thee rest from all thine enemies round about, that thou shalt blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. Thou shalt not forget it. And one of the ways that they would not forget it is that those tribes that were on the periphery were on the hill of cursing. Amalek didn't come after those that were in the center. It didn't come after people like Joshua, people like Phinehas, people like Moses. Amalek doesn't want to mess with them. They went after the people that were weak. And where do you find the weak people? Well, generally you find them on the outside, on the fringe, on the perimeter. The people that are strong are those who are at the heart of God's purpose. Those that are in the midst of the ecclesia, those who are active, those who are always abounding in the work of the Lord. And the other reference, Numbers chapter 11. This is also an attribute of fringe members of an ecclesia. Deuteronomy 11. And verses 1 and 2. This is back into the wilderness. And when the people complained, it displeased Yahweh, and Yahweh heard it, and his anger was kindled. And the fire of Yahweh burnt among them and consumed who? Those that were in the uttermost parts of the camp. Same word. The fire didn't burn those who were in the middle, those who were working. The fire burnt those that were on the outside. So what's the lesson of the placement of these tribes? Well, the lesson is we want to be at the center of God's purpose. We want to be active. Look at the spirit of Isaiah in Isaiah 6, verse 6. He said, "Here am I, send me. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. Send me." The Apostle Paul counseled us, be always abounding, steadfast, unmovable by Amalek in the work of the Lord. There was Paul's example in Galatians 6. I always bear about in my body the marks of the Lord Jesus. The house of Stephanas in 1 Corinthians 16. The word that was used of them is they are addicted to giving. They are addicted. In the Greek word actually means to be on drugs. That's where our word pharmacy comes from. They are addicted to giving. They were so focused upon the truth that they were just addicted to it. Epaphroditus in Philippians chapter 2, Paul calls him my fellow laborer. So do we want to be on the outside and have to sort of be dragged along to the kingdom? Or do we want to be active? Do we want to be willing? Do we want to be at the center of God's purpose? That's the lesson of why those tribes are on the hill of blessing. Is the people who are not susceptible to Amalek getting them are the ones that are working. And isn't that true? When I get into trouble in my life, when I fall into sin, it's when I'm being lazy. It's when I'm not doing what I'm supposed to. When I'm on the outside, so to speak. That's when I get into trouble. When I don't get into trouble, generally, is when I'm active. Like the last 3 weeks, I've just been buried in my room working on these studies. It's not as easy for Amalek to get you when you're in those conditions. But if you're just lazy going through each day as if it's all going to go on and on and on, that's when you can get into trouble. And so that's what we have to remember. We need people in our ecclesias, I'm speaking specifically to young people here because this is a young folks' effort, that when there is work that needs to be done, we put our hands up and we volunteer. We do whatever is necessary. It is not funny to avoid work. You know, we had a working bee at our ecclesia a few weeks ago, and you know, there's kids that want to work and there's kids that don't. And the kids that were working, the hardest thing they had to do was not the raking and the cleaning. It was the comments that they were getting from the people that weren't working. They were saying, you know, things like sucker and things like that, because they got caught out having to do work. It is not funny to avoid work. We want to take on our jobs, to do whatever we can to be willing and active participants in whatever we're asked to do. That's the lesson of why those tribes were on the hill of blessing. Now I'd like you to come to Joshua 24. A few years later, Joshua gathered all the tribes to Shechem. He's about to give his farewell address to the people. I just want to lay the groundwork in these last few minutes for our third study. Joshua chapter 24. Now Joshua chapter 24 starts in verses 1 to 13 with Joshua giving the people what seems to be like a history lesson. Verse 1. Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel to Shechem and called for the elders of Israel and for their heads and for their judges and for their officers, and they presented themselves before God. And Joshua said unto all the people, Thus saith Yahweh Elohim of Israel, Your fathers dwelt on the other side of the flood in old time, even Terah, the father of Abraham, and the father of Nahor, and they served other gods. So here at Shechem, appropriately, Joshua is taking their attention back to Abraham. And he says, Your fathers dwelt on the other side of the flood. Now, what's the flood? Anybody know? Anybody have an RV or an RSV or anything like that? The flood is actually the river Euphrates. Now that may sound strange, the river Euphrates being called the flood, but it's interesting that Ur of the Chaldees, where Abraham came out of, is just right below the conflux of the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers. Massive rivers. They would make those three rivers down there in Pittsburgh look like little country streams. And when a group of Christadelphians many years ago went down there to Ur of the Chaldees to see the excavations that had been done, they were supposed to go by bus from Baghdad down to a place called Nasiriyah. And then from Nasiriyah, it was about 12 miles on to Ur of the Chaldees. When they got to Nasiriyah, they said, You can't go by bus, you've got to go by train. I said, Well, why is that? They said, The only thing above the water is the train line. So, this brother who went on this tour showed me photographs from that train right above Ur of the Chaldees. And those photographs were taken all directions, north, south, east, and west, and you could not see anything but water. You could not see in all directions anything but water, as shallow as it may have been, but you'd never cross it. That's what the flood is here. Your fathers dwelt on the other side of the flood. It was a massive barrier, as it were, between he and the promise of God. And he made that journey going all the way up to Haran, up and up and up to bypass the Euphrates. And the apostle says, he didn't even know where he was going. That's the journey that he had to make. That's what you call faith. And so Joshua starts off with that. Your fathers dwelt on the other side of the flood. He goes through all this history. And there's one common thread that goes through it all. Blessing and cursing. We find, for example, in verse 3, Israel being blessed, Canaan being cursed. We find in verse 5, Israel being blessed, Egypt being cursed. We find in verse 7, Israel given light, in other words, they're blessed. The Egyptians being cursed, they're given darkness. It goes all the way like that through down to verse 13. Their enemies are delivered. The Amorites are cursed. Verses 9 and 10, Israel is blessed by Balaam. Balaam was then hired to curse. Verses 12 and 13, Israel given the land without labor. They're blessed. The Amorites driven out. They're cursed. It's blessing and it's cursing all the way through. Verse 20, Yahweh hath done thee good. If you choose life, you'll get blessed. Forsake Yahweh, choose death, you'll get cursed. It's that simple. Blessing or cursing, which one do you want? When you read those verses, it appears as though Joshua's just giving them a history lesson. He's not. He's putting before them a choice. Which one do you want? So when Joshua stood there on that day and gave them that speech at Shechem, which we'll consider God willing in our next class, what was he trying to get them to remember? Well, by complete coincidence, of course, he was trying to get them to remember Abraham. In Genesis chapter 12, Shechem was Abraham's first stop in the land. Joshua now makes this his farewell speech. Abraham had a choice of blessing or cursing. Joshua, in the verses we just covered in outline, They were given a choice of blessing or cursing. An altar was constructed by Abraham. A great stone was constructed by Joshua. You use stones to construct altars. We saw the oak of Moreh in Genesis chapter 12, which spoke of the way that Abraham was supposed to walk. And in Joshua chapter 24, I'd like you to turn over to verse 26. We find there that Joshua wrote all these words in the book of the law of God and took a great stone and set it up there under an oak that was by the sanctuary of Yahweh. Now this is at Shechem, that was under an oak. Now the word, the Hebrew word there, actually has a definite article. It's not under an oak. It's under the oak. Now, which oak would that have been? But we're suggesting the oak that Abraham came to in Genesis chapter 12. They come to the very same place. They set up that memorial under the oak, right where Abraham had to make a decision. And of course, we have our friends, the Canaanites, back as well. They were there in the times of Abraham. They're there in the times of Joshua. And they're within all of us today. We have to make up our minds. Who are we going to serve?